then groundbreaking, September 2014. That was a delightful day.
It was unbelievable.
It was a big party.
We did.
Many of us were there.
We constructed probably the world's largest sandbox. Everything we've done has had kids at the forefront. You asked at the very beginning about thinking about future generations, and that's why the kids participated in the groundbreaking. We had little gold shovels that had the Gathering Place logo on it. Really what we wanted, the picture was not a bunch of donors with shovels. The picture was the kids.
Right.
And we had hundreds, maybe thousands of kids that were in that sandbox playing, and they weren't really paying attention to the talkers, the people, the speeches, the governor and the mayor. The kids were just having a ball. In fact, I can remember my youngest son came up to me at the end and he said, "Dad, you've built the best park ever. Thank you." It was a sandbox and we had fire engines and we had the tape tunnels from the Children's Museum. And in his mind, that was it. And I can remember in one of our budget meetings later, we were consternating over the enormity of the budget. And I told George, my son came up to me at the groundbreaking and said it was the best park ever. Maybe we just do that every weekend. But in all seriousness, that day was really special. Yeah. It was the first time people had been able to walk on the site. People were walking through the groves of trees. We had pictures of all the renderings that NVVA had done, and we blew them up on these big boards and had them scattered throughout the site where the boathouse would be. We'd have a picture and the lodge and the playground. I can remember the stage was kind of set up on the edge of the grove of trees, which is now the west side of the playground area. And there were families walking through there and looking at the picture, and I can remember adults saying, "Oh, this is where we're going to come and play." Mm-hmm. People started to kind of get a glimpse for what this would be, how big the site was and what the park would feel and be like that day. And that was kind of exciting.
Then in November of that year, 2014, the work actually begins. 66 of those acres of the 100 acres.
So after the groundbreaking, we started putting fence up. Then we started doing all of our conservation work, all of our silt fences and things. But yes, dirt work started just right after that.
What was the first project?
All the underground utility work. The city came in and started all the stormwater work. We had stormwater work on the south end, off of 30th Street, behind there. A new stormwater ran all the way up. In Travis Park, the neighborhood here right behind, we had a new stormwater connection made underneath the Midland Valley Trail. And then along the north end, we had a stormwater overflow. Stormwater from Swan Lake and Creek, which runs kind of underneath North Maple Ridge. So those two projects started just quite literally right after groundbreaking. And then all of our site utility work began. You have to remember, this site was about as flat as a dinner plate.
Yep.
I mean, it sloped slightly to the south for drainage, but when you look at the topographical changes when you're on site, basically everything from the grove of trees over here on the western side of the playground, that's the original grade. Everything that's below that has been cut out, and everything that's above that grade is an add. And there's 450,000 cubic yards of material moved on this site. So basically, for 2.5-3 years, that's all that happened was dirt work and underground utility work, all the stormwater and drainage. And then we got 26 miles of electric and fiber running underground that people really don't realize. I mean, there's just a lot of underground work, and that was all happening in those early years. I'd bring people out, and it was just brown dirt everywhere. I mean, that was really all it was. And we moved 250,000 cubic yards of material out of the river. That's basically the pond area was the cutting area to build the highest point, which was behind the boathouse. And then we took a lot of material out of the river as well.
That was a long drudgery job, wasn't it?
Huh?
I bet you were anxious to start doing something above ground.
Yeah, I ruined a lot of loafers and and slacks. With dirt stains. Yeah, it was a lot of dirt work.
Did vegetation come in first? I bring that up because my first visit, the vegetation looks like it's been here for 50, 60, 70 years. It was amazing.
One of the very other first things we did was hire Bill Pruce, who's a local arborist. He categorized every tree on the property, determined its health. Michael Van Valkenburg and Associates took that database, and then the most healthy, strongest, largest trees were all identified. And then literally we designed the playground inside of the parameters of the trees. Bill was kind of our custodian of all of our trees throughout the process. He was on site during the entire part of the construction. There's about 600 trees that were kept We built these huge fences around them, and we put in oyster emulsion mixed with wood chips that would seep into the ground to keep these trees preserved during construction and keep people from driving on the roots. You know, that's why they lasted through construction. We had a lot of winds, and we lost some trees, because when we started thinning the woods, a lot of those trees protected each other. And when you took the older trees or the dead trees or the ones that were rotted or the ones that weren't going to have long life, then we had some that fell over in the winds. But Bill, he managed keeping all those trees. Then Michael and his team, I mean, the brilliance of their designs are just the intensity and purposefulness of tree placement and the types of trees. And then, you know, there's 1.2 million shrubs, bushes, plants throughout the site. And then we planted nearly 5,789 trees. So when you think about all that, the landscape is so new right now. It's in its very infancy. So every year I'm kind of excited about spring, because the trees are going to be growing and things are going to be thickening in. Really, you'll develop more landscaped rooms, which is Michael's intent, places that are kind of smaller within the park to create those memories and those things, and that's kind of exciting.
Any idea how old some of those trees are that are on the grounds?
Well, the largest, oldest tree is the reading tree, which is over here on what I call the corner of the park next to the playground. The reading tree is an old cottonwood tree, and that's the oldest, largest tree. I don't know exactly how old it is, but it'll be their generations coming. It's programmed. I mean, we have people reading to kids every single day. We all have anywhere from 50 to 200 kids here to read under the tree, or now that it's cold, we're in the lodge. But the trees are a real important part.
So many varieties that you brought in.
118 different species of trees we brought in. Deciduous trees and then evergreen trees. So you have color in the fall and winter, and then you, of course, have the flowering trees and beauty that you'd have in the spring, and then, of course, summertime, all the greenery.
Where do those trees come from?
All over the United States. As far north as upstate New York, Carolinas, Tennessee, a lot of trees, too. A good half of them came from Edmond, you know, from Oklahoma, too. But we have trees from all over.
Yeah. Magnolia is one of our favorites.
Magnolias, yeah. Which, you know, Michael was always shocked at how big and... You know, magnolias are really not a tree that should grow in Tulsa, Oklahoma, but it really was something we talked a lot about. But yeah, they're beautiful, and we have a lot of them planted here.
Dead trees you repurposed, and you made benches. Tell us what you did with those trees.
We have pieces in the playground that are upside-down trees. That's a fun story, too, because that inspiration came from a project. An artist had done a project in Oklahoma City at Myriad Gardens, and when we were touring through there, I took a picture. We were talking about art for the park with Michael. There was an artist who had literally taken a small tree and had taken all the bark off of it, had taken all the dirt off the root ball, and you could see the root ball, the trunk, and then the branches, and it was an art piece. I took a picture, kind of tongue-in-cheek, and sent it to Michael and team and said, is this the kind of natural art we should be looking at? Believe it or not, it sparked ideas for them. They were designing Maggie Daly Park, and they were in construction. They were grappling with some trees that had been honoring cancer survivors, and their park department wanted those trees reused. That was happening at the same time I sent this picture.
In Chicago.
At Maggie Daly Park.
Right.
Just right next to Millennium Park. And what was funny about that was they decided to strip the bark off, preserve the trees, and turn them upside down as art pieces. So the very first ones, that was kind of an inspiration from this artist picture that I had taken in Oklahoma City. And then we saw them in there, and we loved them. So we took some of the larger trees here, which we had much larger, more healthy trees. A chainsaw artist here in Tulsa helped us with preserving them. Bill Proust identified the ones that were the most structurally sound ones. We built a metal shed where we stored the ones that were the heaviest. We had some that were 2.5 tons. In fact, one of our family pictures is taken on that. But we stored them there, and then Bill stored some at his yard. We dried them all out, and then we preserved them and turned them upside down in the playground area. We've used them, like you said, for benches. We have play pieces, little boats that were made. We had tons of benches, all the benches in the outdoor classroom in the playground. All those benches are from recycled, reclaimed trees. We used as many as we possibly could to the park.